If you own a local business and you are trying to attract local clients, you must listen to this interview with David Mim. Check it out. This episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast is brought to you by Active Campaign. This is really my new go-to CRM, ESP, marketing automation, really low cost. Any size business can get into it, starting at like 19 bucks a month. You can keep track of your clients. You can see who is visiting your website. You can follow up based on behavior. Check out Active Campaign. There'll be a link in the show notes, but it's ducttape.me/DTMactive. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jansen. My guest today is David Mim. He's a digital marketing expert for small businesses, founder of GetListed.org, which a company he sold to Moz about 5-6 years ago. And he's also co-founder of the Local University Conference Series. And currently, it's got a new thing going, a startup called Tidings, which I'm going to butcher the description, but he can come back and tell you more. A newsletter from Facebook Creation App. So, David, thanks for joining us. How was that?
That's pretty good. Thanks, John. great to be with you again, and great to be with your audience again.
So I guess I'll start off with, because you write so much about local digital marketing, local search stuff. What's going on right now in local that we need to know about that you don't think enough people are aware of or talking about?
Yep. So I would say there's two or three things that come to mind. In fact, I was actually tweeting with a few people both yesterday and this morning about this exact topic. I would say that the first thing is that at a broad level, Google is essentially trying to keep as many people on the Google SERP as they can. Yeah. That's the Google search results page.
Yeah.
And so they are devouring click-throughs that used to go to either a small business website or even a big brand website that might have a local presence.
Yeah,
a lot of that activity is just staying on the Google SERP right now. And I think that's a big change in the last 2 or 3 years, that not enough, certainly not enough businesses and even not enough marketers are really aware of.
Yeah, there's almost not a question that you can ask Google right now that they don't have the answer right there in the knowledge box, right?
That's exactly right. And, you know, not only are they getting better at answering questions with knowledge boxes instead of websites, but the amount of information and the kind of information they're presenting there is really robust. And especially for local businesses, I mean, if you look at, some of the later, more recent features that they've released are things like the hours that a business is busy versus empty. So that if you're on a busy schedule, you know, hey, maybe I shouldn't go to this, you know, pizza joint over lunch hour. I should wait until 3 o'clock when things have died down a little bit. They're pulling in things like critical reviews. So if a business is on Thrillist or Eater or some of these other, depending on your industry, you know, maybe it's something like Super Lawyers if you're a lawyer. Mm-hmm. They're pulling in the lists of you know, sort of human curated lists of successful local businesses and showing those right in the knowledge panel. So kind of as much information as you want to know about a business, they're trying to present on the Google SERP, which, you know, as a small business, you may still be getting those customers. But I think from a website standpoint, you know, your website is really, it's becoming a way to inform Google about your business, but not necessarily something that as many customers are seeing these days.
Yeah, so that leads me to my next, where's the best place to hide a dead body? It's the second listing on page one.
The second listing, okay, very good, yes. For sure, and especially if you think about what, you know, so many local searches are actually mobile, and in an industry like food and beverage or even in healthcare, you know, 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4 of those searches are happening on mobile devices, and sure enough, I mean, the second listing on Google on a mobile phone is often 4 or 5 scrolls down your phone. And so if you're not, you know, as I've been saying for the last 6 months or so, you know, it used to be if you're not on page one of Google, you're invisible. Well, now it's like, you know, almost exactly what you just said. If you're not number one in Google, you might be invisible because of how much space these knowledge boxes and knowledge panels are eating.
Well, and where does voice search go with that? I mean, because what results are you getting from voice search?
That's exactly right. And I think that voice is, it's certainly informing a lot of the product decisions that Google is making. I mean, voice search in our car, and you know, we don't have access to a screen, and right. Even if we do have access to a screen, that's not something that Google wants to distract people from driving, right? And so the number of results they can show or read back to you is inherently limited by that form factor. And so I think you're starting to see, you know, it's not like Google is using a different algorithm for desktop, for mobile, for voice. They're using the same algorithm. And so you're starting to see the same kinds of interfaces that you might see happening in voice search also happening on mobile and desktop.
What do you think about the trend to sort of blend organic and paid? You know, you're seeing it in the, what do we call that thing now? The three pack.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
And we're also seeing an ad that has reviews in it and, you know, all kinds of, you know, snippets in it now and extensions. So, you know, is there going to be a point where we can't tell the difference?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty, the line is getting pretty blurry. That's for sure. Yeah. And I think that you're right. I assume you're talking about what Google calls home services ads.
Right.
Where you have a, in most cases, a manual application process in order to get included in the set of businesses that are eligible for these home services ads. But if you look at the interface that's presented, I mean, it looks almost exactly the same as the three-pack. And yeah. So from a consumer's perspective, you know, they don't necessarily know that these businesses have paid to get in there. Right. And certainly given where it is positioned on the page, number one, you know, I have to think those things are devouring a lot of clicks in the markets where they're currently piloting it, in San Francisco and San Diego. So, I think that that's just one area where we're seeing Google, again, as you said, blending the, you know, natural or organic results with paid results. And, you know, they've been doing this in a lot of other industries as well. I think over the years, the Google Hotel Finder has eaten a ton of organic traffic that's now part of a paid, you know, sort of a paid inclusion product. They've done insurance comparisons. They've done local inventory ads for car dealers. So they've definitely been experimenting in a lot of different industries. And I think, you know, it's only a matter of time before these kind of hybrid ad units are, you know, rolled out across almost every industry and almost every metro area. So I think it's definitely something to pay attention to.
Well, and I've even seen, I can't remember what the search was or where, but I've even seen some three packs with one paid, two organic.
Yep. That's something that they've just rolled out. In fact, Joy Hawkins, who is a brilliant local search marketer, just started her new business, Sterling Sky. She actually tweeted a great example the other day, a screenshot of a search where a competitor is advertising on another small business's name and actually showing up in the three pack, which is kind of for that business, right? A specific, what we would call a recovery search for a specific business. And so it's kind of amazing that Google is allowing these kinds of things to happen, but absolutely. They're just blending in. They're definitely blurring the line between paid and organic as much as they can get away with.
Do we bother optimizing for the three-pack anymore, or has proximity pretty much taken that away?
No, I disagree with the whole proximity premise. It's certainly important, right? I mean, it's certainly you have to be close enough to a given searcher for Google to consider your business relevant. But I think there's plenty of other ways that Google's evaluating businesses these days, and the three pack certainly still has tons and tons and tons of value. There's a lot. I mean, I'm not really consulting that much anymore, but I still have access to a lot of analytics from former clients. And I see the visibility they're getting from three packs and from maps results as provided by the Google My Business analytics. They're still getting a phenomenal number of impressions and click throughs and interactions from customers. So it's certainly not something that I'm encouraging anyone to kind of give up on organic search or give up on local search. I just think that increasingly the number of winners has been decreasing, and And as you said, you know, Google's kind of blending in more paid ads means fewer organic clicks as well. So I think that you've been in this business longer than I have, but when I got started in the late 2000s, you know, local SEO was a phenomenally phenomenally positive ROI. It was very little effort and huge upside. And anymore, I think it's gotten much harder. It's gotten more competitive. And the number of businesses for whom that's true is declining. So I think if you're not one of these top three and, you know, in some cases the top one, organic search is just, it's going to be a very hard nut to crack for you as a small business.
Yeah. So let's talk about snippets. That's one of those things that I think, you know, there's a little knowledge of, you know, like location snippets and, you know, some of that stuff's just kind of gotten built in. But it seems to me like there's almost a sort of strategic snippet, you know, channel that I think we have to be playing today. What's your take on that?
Absolutely. I think the guy that I look to for a lot of the snippet research is my former colleague at Moz, Dr. Pete Myers. So he's done a lot of research and has published a lot of examples around what he calls ranking in position zero, right? So position zero is these answer boxes where Google is showing a snippet of whether it's a bulleted list that answers a question or in some cases just a sentence that's marked up with the keywords in bold lettering or a table of options, all these kinds of things. Google is essentially extracting the key pieces of information from a given organic web page and populating those right on the search result. And so, you know, it kind of goes hand in hand with the knowledge panel. It's just, it's sort of the knowledge panel for semantic knowledge as opposed to, physical entities when it comes to local. So there certainly, I think that in terms of SEO, it's absolutely a discipline within SEO that is gaining prominence. Practically speaking, I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand with what you would do as far as a best practice for marketing, which is answer the questions that your customers are asking you, right. And do so in a manner that Google can crawl, yeah. And have a relevant enough website that Google sees you as authoritative to answer this question. So it's really, from a rankings perspective, or from a ranking tactics perspective, you know, it's a lot of the same stuff, but I think being smart and being intentional about the kinds of questions you're answering and how you're answering those questions is really going to put you at the forefront of this new, quote, new area of SEO.
This episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast is brought to you by Thrive Leads. This is a tool that we use on the Duct Tape Marketing website thoroughly for content upgrades, for slide in boxes. Actually, we even use the visual editor for all the pages and landing pages that we design. So go check it out at ducttapemarketing.com. We'll have a special link in the show notes for today, and check it out. I'm going to quote you. Unless you are a traditional publisher, you should prepare for a time when no one ever visits your website. That sounds terrible.
Well, does it? Do you really care as a small business if somebody sees your website, or do you care that they click your phone number from a mobile SERP, or click for direct driving directions to your business, or have their self-driving car take you right to the front door?
Right.
So I think you're still, you know, potentially you're still going to get those customers. I mean, I'm sure that there are more pure traditional marketers out there who want to control the conversion experience, but increasingly, Google's doing that, right? They're doing all of this stuff. You can now book a table through OpenTable right from the Google SERP. So why would you ever click through to a restaurant website? In medicine, they've got a pilot going with ZocDoc where you can book a medical appointment through ZocDoc.
Right.
In fitness, they are working with MyTime and Booker and a few of these other booking engines where you can, you know, schedule a class right from the Google SERP. So that's really what I mean by that, is to prepare for a time when all of these interactions are happening right there at Google, and they're not necessarily happening on your website.
And that's really your analogy of thinking your website like an API. I mean, the website still has to have this great information. It has to deliver that information, if you will, to Google. So it's not that you're abandoning the website. It's just how it is maybe seen or where it is in the journey.
Exactly. And I think your website is still at the center of your overall, you know, digital marketing presence, right? I think Mike Blumenthal's graphic from 6 years ago still largely holds true. That website is really, you know, one of the core pieces of of digital equity that you can build. And just because people aren't seeing it as much doesn't make it any less valuable. How is Google going to learn about your business if right. not from the data that you're presenting on your website? And so I think it's still a really critical piece. And the other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, I see what's happening in sort of technology more broadly. I think I would see Google as having a smaller market share in 3 to 4 years than they have today. I think you're seeing Amazon make a huge play, especially if you're a brick and mortar retailer, for example. I think there's going to be Amazon SEO in the future with everything they're doing with Alexa and the Echo device. I think Facebook is a sleeping giant in local search. I think that they have a lot of great data, and it's just a matter of time before you know, people start using Facebook for search. Apple, we haven't even talked about, but everybody knows they have Siri. Apple Maps is a third of Google Maps. And so I think just because Google is kind of devouring more of these click-throughs, it doesn't mean that you're not going to get visitors from these other channels, and even especially from your own direct marketing, whether that's direct mail or email or those kinds of things. So I think your website is still important, and I wouldn't encourage anyone to think of it as anything but that.
I want to visit a couple just random topics. You may say, I don't really know much about that, but I'd love to hear. What's your take on chatbots?
Chatbots. Okay, so I don't know a ton about them. However, I think at this point, not only is the technology a little bit too nascent to really kind of sink your teeth into,
right.
But I'm not sure that the consumer awareness and consumer demand is really there. From a chatbot perspective, I think one of the great advantages you as a small business have over somebody like a national brand or a national retailer is that personalized service.
Right.
And so there may come a time when chatbots really, you know, help a small business save time in talking to customers and all these kinds of things. But I think for right now, it's a little bit early to jump in and start experimenting with that stuff, especially since it kind of, to some extent, eats away at your kind of core differentiator.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's going to be a day where it'll be like email too. You know what I mean? Nobody wants that stuff in Facebook Messenger or whatever, because now there's thousands.
There's too many. Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So a recent act of Congress kind of scared some folks on this whole net security and NSA spying and stuff. What's your take on, I mean, do we all need VPNs?
Yes, absolutely. And I am not a technical guy, but I certainly I am very much a strong advocate of consumer privacy. And I think the recent congressional decision was just appalling. I think that particularly when you see the things like the Verizon and Yahoo merger/acquisition, I mean, the amount of data that companies like Verizon and Comcast and AT&T all have access to, I think it's a tremendous privacy invasion. And if you're the least bit concerned about corporations knowing what you're doing and selling your data to anyone,
right. Right.
I think absolutely everyone should get a VPN.
Well, you were
dark times.
Yeah,
I have to say, dark times.
Yeah. You didn't hesitate on that one. So
no.
Okay, so this late in the show, I'm going to open up a really big topic that we could do a whole show on, but maybe you could just tease this a little bit and send people, and we'll have it in the show notes. You have a graphic, I think that you call the graphic the local stack, but you've written a lot really just about, you know, how to analyze your whole local marketing, digital marketing play, you know, operations, customer service, presence, organic marketing, paid marketing, attribution. You want to kind of unpack that a little bit and tell people, you know, what you think is in that for them to go and visit and figure it out?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for bringing that up. So the graphic is at tidings.com/stack. And as you said, it's the, you know, my attempt to visualize sort of a marketing stack priority checklist. And so the idea is that you start with things that every small business needs, things like, you know, accounting software and a domain name and those and a website and those kinds of things. And you kind of check off everything. It's sort of loosely drawn on the analogy of like a mass transit map, where you have kind of zone one. That's the stuff you kind of everybody needs. Zone two, you can kind of graduate to that once you've checked all the boxes in zone one, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, by the end, you get to things in zone six like chatbots, you know, like Beacon, some of this technology that's really bleeding edge that it might be a little bit too early to start thinking about. So that's kind of the idea behind that graphic, and essentially kind of plot your journey and look for, you know, marketing technology, marketing software, even marketing, just offline marketing tactics to kind of plug in at each stage of your journey.
One of the most compelling elements of it for me is the entire layer of attribution. I think that that is one that is terribly misunderstood, but I think also just terribly underutilized by most businesses. And I think that you've sort of built it squarely into the strategic consideration.
Absolutely. It's the top line in the graphic. And even if you as a small business don't have the time or the expertise to understand what your attribution software is telling you, just collecting that data can make a huge difference. If you ever bring in a consultant or somebody to help you kind of understand that data, that's kind of the first point. So things like not having Google Analytics installed on your website, or sending your email newsletter on a one-to-many basis instead of using an ESP like Constant Contact or MailChimp or Emma or anybody, and getting the analytics around who's opening and, you know, what's driving them to which product pages, those kinds of things. I think that the amount of data that you can collect about who's coming to your site and how they're using, or your business, doesn't have to be on your website, any digital profile that you have and who they are and what they're doing can give you tremendous insight into what marketing techniques are working and where you can improve.
Yeah, and I'd add Webmaster or the Search Console on top of that one too, for as a just absolutely given as well.
Absolutely, yep.
So tell us a little bit about Tidings. What's your first, I guess maybe give the overview of what the product actually is, but then I'd love to hear a little of your thinking on what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, for sure. I guess currently I would say the best way to describe it, you did a great job. Essentially, it's a web app that allows you to create an email newsletter instantly based on all of the existing social media content that you're creating. So basically, we ask you to connect your Facebook page, and then, you know, week to week or month to month, if you prefer a monthly newsletter, we automatically pull in anything that you've shared from Facebook. And so it's just a way to leverage your existing social media activity into a channel that is, by all accounts, much more productive in terms of ROI than social media. I think, you know, people who've been around this on your podcast for a while probably know that, you know, Facebook is really pinching the organic reach of business page posts. And so right now at this point, you know, if you look at the stats from MailChimp and GetResponse and these big email providers, you're looking at probably 8 to 1 in terms of the number of people who open an email versus see a post on Facebook. And so I think a lot of small businesses still think of Facebook first. And this is really, Tidings is really geared to not disrupt that mindset, but really leverage what you're doing on Facebook into a more productive channel.
And it automatically formats it in a very, you know, pleasing way. But I think the other thing that's kind of neat about it is a lot of people, or at least a lot of the folks that I advise, I mean, we're sharing some of their content as well as other people's content. And so it almost acts as a curation device, because even if you have great organic reach, there's a good chance that a lot of people aren't seeing 90% of it just because they didn't see that day's post. So being able to kind of collect it. And I know that from my years of doing this, that my blog readers are different people than my newsletter or my email readers. So it just kind of allows you to really, probably the key is, of course, it's very simple. So it's not a real time suck, but it also allows you to do some things that I think are really valuable.
Yeah, cool. That's definitely the idea. And I think you explained it even better than I could have. So I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Well, we'll have some links and whatnot in the show notes. And there's a way to try it out as well as a way to subscribe when you go to.
For sure. Yeah, it's a free 3-week trial. So no credit card until you try to send the fourth time.
Great. Well, David, always great to catch up with you. I could probably do this weekly. There's so much to talk about.
I know. It feels like it.
on this front. But hopefully we will. You're in Portland, right? Is that right?
I am.
Is
yeah. Right? Yeah. Yep.
I was just there a couple weeks ago, actually, for a conference, and had some really tasty Blue Star donuts.
Oh, yeah. No, the donuts, the coffee, and the beer out here are all pretty top-notch. It's pretty good.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, David. Hopefully we'll run into you out there on the road.
Cool. Sounds good. Thanks again, John.